Take the Fifth Amendment.
Plead the Fifth.
Yeah, yeah, plead the Fifth Amendment.
I went early, a day early on an appearance once. When I was done in college, they gave me the date.
You're keen.
They gave me the date. I remember the date.
Like, subscribe, comment, and hit the notification bell for any future videos.
We are back, and for the first time, we have Johnny O, a veteran of the cab trade. Not as much as a veteran as our regular almost now, Mr. Peter Maynard. And my co-host is David Frampton, who's always there to ask the questions that are important and cutting edge.
Oh, I don't know about that. I would have loved to know some knowledge, but I believe... You didn't go to a knowledge school, is that right?
I did, and I basically bought myself a very large map and a big long ruler, a piece of wood. I would measure it out, straight line, and then I would actually write it down on my little notepad. And I would—I don't think I even had a board on the front of my bike. I had a piece of string going from the two wing mirrors going across.
Did you? To hold a piece of paper on a clothes pegs, flapping in the wind?
Yeah, and basically, more or less Nola run before I actually done it, where I'd obviously written it out, and it worked for me. I got through start to finish in 15 months. So.
How many Blue Book runs were there? Was it 4, 6, 8?
Something like that. It was the old system where you did the first so many pages, then you went out of that, and then obviously then it was ongoing after that.
Johnny O, I know the answer to this, but what school did you go to?
I think it was Wizz Ed. I think I had a Wizz Ed.
We tried to buy you, but you kept coming back.
But he was at Watts Grove when I first... Then you went to Galenda Street.
Yeah. Watts Grove were the greatest days.
Yeah.
Really, that was the best school we ever had. Did you like it there?
I did, yeah. I came to the beginner's course with you and sat there with like 15 people around the table. By the end of the meeting, you knew everyone's name.
Oh, the memory trick.
I witnessed that at Galenda Street, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, I come in.
How many people were in your one when I did it?
It was about 40. Yeah. And every single person you
called everyone off. John.
Yeah. I remember clearly.
Just a case of, like you're doing the runs, build up.
You're basically doing what you say, do four, stop, do four. So you was doing two, 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 similar. Yeah.
It's one of the oldest memory tricks in the book is to compartmentalise and chunk pieces. So I'm putting together a four. That's all I'm remembering is four. And once I realise I've done four, I've done the other four. They're two sets. They're not eight. And you can do everything like that. And the runs is exactly how you need to do the runs.
That's how I've done it.
Yeah. Tell Dean how you managed, because I don't know many people who've got this. Do you manage to get a double A by doing what?
Mr. Wilkins, very nice gentleman, gave me four runs. In the order of the book.
Double A.
And where was you then? Was that your first 28?
Second 28, I think.
Second 20, and you went straight to 21s.
I got Mom Gerard on the next one. And the first thing she said to me, I see you've done very well in your last appearance. And ruined me.
Ruined you. Yeah.
Yeah, she really did. But
they got rid of double A's because of you.
Yeah.
I wasn't the last.
Pete, you won't know what a double A is.
No, it's all new. This is all new talk.
Yeah,
it's old talk now because they've done away with it.
Came and went, and you didn't even notice.
How long was the double A about? Then?
It was a few years. I came in 2000, if I'm not mistaken. What year did you do it?
About 2011, 2012.
The new system came in 2000, so the scoring system came in then. But something you probably none of you know is that there used to be an E, double A, A, B, C, D, and E.
What was the difference between E and D then?
Well, you could get three E's and you got redlined, four D's and you got redlined. It was kind of an oversight, the E, where they've realised they've kind of complicated it a little bit, and it went fairly quickly.
Yeah. They still do the U?
Yes, so U is basically ungraded for today.
Can you as a student ask for a U? Say you're having a bad day, you're having a meltdown, and you can't see nothing, and can you just say, can I have a U?
You can. One thing people don't generally know is that you can cancel your appearance at any time. Right up to the fact of before it starts. So you can walk them behind them and sit down in that chair and say, I want to cancel today's
appearance.
And that's
no consequence to you.
Zero. Zero.
So that's a good thing for them to know, isn't it?
Yes, it's important. I mean, one of the students really should have done it the other day. He had some bad couple of nights. He's in the hospital with his family a couple of nights. He hasn't slept very well. He hasn't managed to study like he would normally do or prepare. And you go up and you're all over the show. And he said, I wish I'd have cancelled. But he said it was too late. It wasn't.
No.
Right there. I go for it and just say, I'm here because I want to be here, but I'm not going to do the appearance because I really am not in the show.
I would never have known that.
Take the Fifth Amendment.
Plead the Fifth.
Yeah, plead the Fifth Amendment.
I went early, a day early on an appearance once. When I was done in college, they gave me the date.
You're keen.
They gave me the date. I remember the date. But he told me the wrong day. So I didn't look at the card and I was sitting at Palastra like that.
What's that?
The badge number. Well, when I was doing the knowledge, I called over partners. Says, why don't we, when we all pass, get our badge number tattooed on us? I've covered it tattooed. And lo and behold, I was the only one that had it done.
That was never done. How many said they was going to do it?
Four or five,
and you was the only one who had the tattoo.
That's my word, David.
Hold your hand up like that towards that one so they can see it.
So they can see it. 72802.
So if I lose my badge, I was...
Cut your hand off.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, cut your hand off. Just cut your hand off, get a new one.
So when you get badge and build at St Pancras, you just go...
Easy, Tiger.
And then get arrested for assault.
I've got no tattoos. You tattooed up, Dave?
Not one.
Not one, yeah.
Not one.
All the best criminals don't have tattoos.
No.
Covered up, though. Can't see it.
I had guilty on that one.
You have?
On my 60th birthday, my son took me to the place in Exmouth Market and said, Dad... There you go. You've always wanted a tattoo. I've actually got a heart with Susan's name.
Ah. Don't get me all teary-eyed now. Jesus Christ. I thought you was going to say you had the Arsenal badge.
No.
That was shameful.
Nothing that.
Either are you used to in anything like LTDA or UCG or anything like that?
I do subscribe to the LTDA.
You're a fan, though, aren't you?
To a point, yes. I would say that for the obvious reasons, for over 42 years of driving a cab, I had two periods whilst using their excellent six scheme, which served me well.
Yeah.
On two, literally duration of 2 years, and it helped me out on two separate occasions. Used their legal representation on a couple of occasions when a spurious...
I remember you saying in the previous podcast, you said about that.
We've touched on that before. They do what it says on the tin, basically. As for some of the representation on cab trade matters, they could be a bit more forceful. I think it's too much of a very much a cozy situation where they don't really want to upset the apple cart up there. That's my personal opinion up there. And you really need someone... such as a Bob Crow type to go in and really.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only way to deal with people. When people, as they TFL, treat us cab drivers with such contempt, I think you really do need someone who can actually go in there and stamp on the desk. And
We discussed this yesterday with Trevor, and one of the problems, the huge problem with our trade, is we are very, very fragmented.
Well, that's it. You have got... what's our numbers now? 14,000. You've got 14,000 individual
idiots. I'm one.
I rest my case. No, you've got 14,000 individual business people who nobody sees eye to eye with everybody else. But I think what my personal opinion is, there is a lot of talented people within the cab trade who would do more than an adequate job to get up and represent us as a body, but unfortunately, as soon as people raise their head above the pulpit,
parapet,
there's far too many people only willing to shoot you down.
True. I don't think anyone's ever been shot above the pulpit.
I don't know. There's a few that should be.
Yeah, that's true.
And that is it. There is on a day-to-day basis, even you stand around.
It's always been the same, Peter. I know it is.
It's wrong, but I say I can see the reason as to why they won't. Because you make if you go on Save Our Black Taxes, you make a comment or something. The derogatory remarks you get from people.
And you're absolutely right with the fact that there is a lot of people in our industry that are super articulate, super intelligent and super thoughtful. But they put their head above the pulpit and the vicar comes over, smacks him with a... But they put their head above it, and you're right. Is there such a word as disarticulation? Or have I just invented that?
Probably.
But the fact of what people say against you is so schoolboy.
Classic example. I put a post up. My daughter jumped in a cab at Charing Cross, and she was going to an event at the V&A. And the cab driver at Charing Cross asked for the postcode of the V&A. And which, took me back.
Yep.
And I just happened to post, they said what I've just said on the thing. People said, made up stories that didn't happen again. And it's basically, why on earth
Would you make it up?
Would you make it up?
And yeah, but whatever, they're all looking for an argument. That's why I don't go on Twitter.
Just put you down, and they just spell put nothing.
Well, if you go on Twitter, just use it to read or watch or whatever. Don't get involved because people will just jump all over you.
Sometimes.
Say ridiculous things at you.
Sometimes. Well, the thing is, with Twitter, you used to mention the word cycle, and straight away you would have a barrage of comments. It's like there must be a red flag that goes up to every cycling campaignist in the country that...
Oh, you don't mind being attacked by cyclists, though, do you?
No, I wouldn't be bothered.
Nah,
cyclists, no. Yeah, and that gets us back to saying about likes of LTDA and all that. Do you think knowledge students should join that then for that protection when you're coming into things like that?
You certainly do need, because if you go up there, try and defend yourself on that, you're onto hiding and nothing. Mm. You really do. I will say that their legal representation is like second to none. Yeah.
Well, UCG got legal
representation. UCG are very good,
I know, mention him, but he had quite a serious complaint against him.
Mm-hmm.
And LCDA, who was with, he was out in Essex somewhere, and they actually went and got all the CCTV.
Yeah, they're very thorough.
And done it, and he got like no further action. I think the LCDA do a knowledge students.
Yeah.
You just think it's for your protection, but obviously it's not.
Because you're out there every day, you just don't know what's around the corner.
Mm.
And you'd be on your own otherwise without.
It's worth 15, 20 quid a month.
Yeah, especially with the 3 points that are accumulating now. He was talking about the 3 points for touching the phone yesterday, weren't we? 6 points.
Well, it's not touching it. It's actually holding or whatever. Once it's fixed to the dash, it's
Dave,
fixed
we've had
to
this
dash.
Argument before. It actually we're still isn't.
Can we actually clarify on that? Right, your phone is in
a cradle.
Cradle on the thing. So, therefore, are you allowed, say for argument's sake, you pull up the traffic lights, stationary, can you touch...
Doesn't matter if you're at the traffic lights or not, you're in control of the vehicle. Once the engine's, the ignition's on, that's it. It doesn't matter if you're driving or not, you can still touch it. Otherwise, you can't touch. Put your air conditioning on, you can't put your windows down, they're just switches. The phone becomes a switch attached to the dash.
True.
That's all it is the same. That's why they will then say prolonged use or distracting yourself by using it becomes driving without due care and attention. It's a different charge to using
it. It is a different charge. It's the undue care and attention that is the grey area. So as you looked down to touch your phone, if anything happens in front of your vehicle that someone's witnessing, then they can say, he didn't see that. Maybe a child runs out.
They can say the same note by doing your radio or anything else.
But they couldn't nick you, funny enough, could it?
Well, driving without due care and attention is driving without due care and attention.
Yes, but they're saying that they're applying it. You are absolutely right on that particular point. But they are applying it with the fact of touching the phone, whereas touching your heater, they're not applying it. The police are not taking that as a...
Yeah, because they've got no record of it. They'd have no way of knowing. See, with the phone, they take the phone away from you, and they have a look, and they say, "Oh, at that exact second that you touched that, or you've answered a call, or you've accepted a job," that's their evidence. If you was to touch the rear heated windscreen or your air conditioning, there would be no record of it anywhere that you'd done that, would there?
Yeah.
For them to know that you'd done that you was distracted.
On a similar subject to actually touching your phones, the new CabVision CabPay system basically relies on the driver's own phone system. So your phone is sitting in the cradle, you have to put it's not linked as the old systems where automatically it would go straight from the meter into the unit in the back with the price coming up. I have to physically put the price of the fare in and press confirm. Right, what is the difference between that and having your own handheld unit
with CabVision? You only use it when you stop the vehicle.
There's no difference in If you've got low pay, as a lot of drivers do have, there's no difference between using low pay, which is not approved, and CabVision, which is approved. The systems work basically exactly the same. You have to manually press. The only difference being with low pay and CabVision is you've got a button to press to print off a Bluetooth. There's nothing to stop.
But you've got to be doing this when you're stationary, surely.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, the ignition's on.
Can you be done for undue care and attention whilst you're stationary with the engine rolling?
Yes.
Go on, give an example where you think that would work.
If the traffic pulls away. So, for instance, you're doing something and the traffic lights go to green and it pulls away and there's a gap now there in front of you, that's driving without due care and attention.
There we go.
Do you want another example?
Yeah, go on.
I ain't got one.
So what about the example then I'm sitting on the side of the road, I haven't joined the traffic flow and I've got the engine
rolling.
You
pull away from a roundabout. Anything that's, you're now driving without, if you've not kept up with the flow of traffic, which is one of the big old things, isn't it? Keeping up with the flow of traffic. If you're not doing something like that, i.e. the lights change it. The traffic moves in a roundabout in front of you. You're playing with a radio or your the phone or anything else.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's going to be a discretion of the thing.
Yeah, of course it is.
And if you accept a job on an app, it's like when you're playing, I don't know, Tom Bowler Bingo or something. Mm.
Bingo? Who's playing Bingo?
I'm watching a video. You know, if you you knock someone over and they go for their phone and you use your phone to accept the job.
If you're playing Bingo and knock someone over.
If you're watching a video or...
Well, I did the watching a video one. I know I saw someone on YouTube that was doing it, but that's just obscene. Isn't it?
Cab drivers do it.
Well, you see some of those Teslas. It's like being in the IMAX, the screen on the front of their cars. How is that not a distraction for whilst you're driving? The pure size of the screen, you cannot be not have your eyes on that screen whilst you're driving.
Well, getting into the fact of the distraction then as well, what about the PHV drivers that have got three phones sitting in front of their eyes like this on different mounts?
One in the eyeline of
your I mean, I'm one of those, I don't even have a bloody smelly thing hanging from the wing mirror. I hate anything that's in my line of sight.
I want to know the ways that you work, and that's so used to. How do you work? In other words, do you use apps, streets, ranks? What is it you do? What do you do for your work? And I know a little bit about you, but everyone else doesn't.
I do a school run. It's my first job every day. Two boys, Lewisham, and they go to a school in Pimlico.
Oh, so it's a pre-booked kind of regular deal?
Regular. Monday to Friday, and I pick about 3:40, and I'm home by 5.
So that starts your day and finishes your day.
Yep.
It's a nice little number.
Obviously, Monday to Friday.
Monday to Friday. Weekend to come out.
I actually do the work run. I actually take my partner into work in the morning and pick her up in the afternoon.
But does she pay?
Only on strike days. where she can actually reclaim the...
I can ask what area you drop her. Good luck.
I drop her. I drop her at Lombard Street every morning. She walks through the alleyway.
In the work straight away.
She walks straight into the alleyway into Cornhill, which from end of November we can no longer access from Princess Street.
Mm-hmm. We was talking about
that wrong, then. I thought you could.
No, it's actually stopping. It's
27.
You're gonna have to do what I do. Drop her in Cornhill.
No, Cornhill you still get from there.
No, access. You're not going to be able to access Princess Street into Cornhill. From November.
You can't.
Are you sure?
But you'll be able to drive. If you wanted anything, you're kind of going to be going towards Bank Junction and everything's going to be a kind of in and out kind of process, isn't it?
I can't drive Bishopsgate.
As far as I could understand, Renee, because obviously I take an active interest because sometimes I actually do pick her up.
Well, then explain it better then.
You can't get it from Leadenhall Street.
Yeah.
You can't go from Bishopsgate to Bishopsgate.
You can get it from Fred Needle and turn around. You could do that. Is that gone?
You used to do the Bartholomew, right, Fred Needle, left. That's been long gone basically, since the...
Since the 80s.
Getting back to what I was saying, I pick up... I take my partner into work in the morning and I...
And you work the shift.
Retriever, depending on what... She works various shifts between 8 and 10...
And so in that shift, you've gone in, you've dropped her off, but then you'd work during the middle of the day. Do you stop for lunch?
No, I'm a real old stickler, basically. I'll head over straight back over London Bridge, fill up Southwark Bridge Road for me.
Diesel?
Petrol, TXE deal.
Oh, sorry, sir.
I'll make my way up to the rank at Waterloo. It's old habits die hard. Loads of drivers do it because you see the same time every day.
Just a routine, isn't it?
It is just a routine. And Waterloo's not a bad rank to actually kick off your day.
Mm-hmm.
I work through to about 1 o'clock, 1:30, stop for lunch for half hour, 45 minutes.
How far is the rank going back at Waterloo when you turn up there?
Depending if we're doing what we term as the earliest, and that means either 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock start, it's usually pretty running. Mm. 10 o'clock start, it's obviously sometimes halfway back down the slope, which since the while of doing the works on the station, it's not so bad because it's basically half a rank at the moment, so it tends to run pretty well, and that's the rest of the day.
Do you use apps?
I do subscribe to all free apps, but have I done a job on them? No.
Never.
I used to. I'm a real objective to the fact of why should we pay for our own work?
No, that's true. Yeah. I mean, but what if that work was a bonus on top of what you wouldn't have had? Then
bonus is a bit, or a bribe.
If you actually speak to most, right, going back long times when I was on Comcab back in the 80s, drivers used to use the apps and the radio, as was then called, to get into work and then to get home.
So what's changed? That's the same deal.
Basically, well, I'm bringing someone in and I'm taking someone home. So therefore.
Oh, you've got that part covered.
Yeah.
But to be honest with you, so even if the app covered that job for a lot of people, the in and the out job, then, you know, you can't complain. It's doing exactly what the apps, the com cabs and the dialer cabs did all those years ago. Oh, yeah.
But obviously then, with the way it was structured then, you would get your run in if you was, say for argument's sake, you were sitting on the rank at St Paul's and a job was called on Gresham Street. You'd be meter on. You'd be clocked down straight away. Mm-hmm. Whereas now with the apps, you're driving around. How long is it going to take you to get round to Gresham Street? 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Then you've got to give them 5 minutes grace to... You've done 15 minutes. 15 minutes in terms of actual... If you was actually driving or... It amounts to a fair bit. I think that's what a lot of drivers overlook, that fact that you on some of those app jobs, you're losing 15 minutes. And then on the fact that you're losing... Whatever percentage they're taking, moment in
you on the apps, John?
No,
none of them.
I've got downloaded and I do some on occasionally, but I just happy with work on the street, hotels, stations. Yeah. I've done work on the apps, but when it was Tuesday when it's chucking it down, I was dropped over at Westfield, coming back into Holland Park Avenue, and it was pinging all over the place. It was going, it was like,
so you've got them on, you've got the apps on, but you just don't pick them up. The passengers can see you, but he's just teasing them, isn't he?
Here I am, you can't have me.
Yeah, no. This is the old adage, what we used to say back in the day, is when it's busy on the radio, it's busy on the street. First off, go back to the touts in the city before licensing of...
Yeah, 1993, 4, 5, 6.
Something like that. I think prior to that, actually, the before the licensing of...
Susie Lampard.
Around about that period, what you would have loads of drivers, and this is my own theory on why the trade is in the state that it's actually in now.
Oh, let's hear it.
And basically what it was... You would have hundreds of drivers who's on dialer cab, com cab. Back in the day, in the mid 80s, most of the large corporations within the city of London, it was written into their T's and C's of their contracts that if they worked after the hours of 8 o'clock, they would be guaranteed a cab home to regardless where they lived. So you would have every driver, radio driver, we're there towards the city of a night time. The city would be buzzing. There'd be people on the streets everywhere. But you'd have loads of cabs parked up, waiting for that elusive job to Southend or wherever you.
Yeah.
And that's what's caused it. People got really pissed off
actually
with having to see cabs sitting around going up to them. And they would be blanking at all the jobs, all the bread and butter jobs, the Clapham and Wandsworth, that everyone... Nowadays, they'd bite their arm off to actually get.
But we caused it.
There was coming out when Solomon Brothers moved from the city to Victoria Plaza. It was like Custer's last stand at 8 o'clock. You'd have hundreds of cabs. There was one particular guy, I remember his name clear as well, called Matthew, who lived at Southend. And he said he'd had a cab home every single night for 3 months to Southend. And all those drivers would be driving around. Everyone, might get Matthew tonight. It's like the fool's gold, really. Oh. And in the meantime, you're sitting there wasting time.
And other people not getting fares.
You could have done two or three jobs over to Clapham or what have you. And that was the advent of the touts, when people, Johnny Come Lately, would go and buy his four-door car. And then it was advocated in the Evening Standard by Richard Littlejohn. He went, this new form of... cabs out there on the street. You negotiate your price with a driver.
Oh, wow. He even advertised it for him.
But basically, he after a while, he did retract his comments on it. But that was the start of the downfall.
So these are the bad things. We're actually into the subject of the
commissions.
The dark side
commissions.
Of the...
And yes. So you're against commissions. Is that right? Paying a commission? Commission you don't like. 15 or 20%.
Yeah, no, yeah.
John, are you for or against commissions? If you someone... Dean as well, you can answer that.
No, I'm not. I don't care.
You don't care?
No,
I'm not. It doesn't.
You're against commission?
50-50, really.
50-50, phone a friend. And I'm completely, I couldn't care less. If like, you know, like sometimes there may be people who have like hotels and they may get a phone call and you see this happen, they come past the rank. Are you against or for?
That's a different question.
What about that? With the doorman's getting a drink?
It's annoying when someone's on point.
Would you do it? If I say I rang you, let's talk hypothetically. Well, there's a two cab job there. It's 100 quid, but you've got to give us a tenner to give to the doorman. No. Would you do it?
No.
Can I ask why not?
Because he's asked me for it.
Yeah.
I'm the first. I'm going to get a job anyway, mate. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've been pulled up 5 minutes before the people come out by a doorman at a big hotel in the West End. Mm-hmm. And I'll give him a tenner because he's pulled me off early. So here you go, mate. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
It's tipping. You're saying it's tipping as opposed to bribing. It's the two different things.
But I can understand why the doorman does it. So obviously,
if
he just gets his back down his
own. Why wouldn't he? If I was a doorman and someone offers me money, am I going to say no? It's my principle to take money.
Every driver gets in his cab in the morning, goes out with as much money as he can. Best to take good jobs and get a bit to whoever. So be it.
So I take it that when you do the school run, I take it whoever pays you, they do it for free. They don't charge you, they don't take any of your money, do they?
I've not got a contract with the school. They've got the contract with the school or the council or whatever. They look for drivers. This is how much they want to pay. Do you want to do it? I say yes or I say no.
But you're very controversial with the doorman thing.
I was going to ask Pete then. Would you give a tip to a doorman?
I've never, in all 42 years of driving, I've been asked on many occasions, and I've...
Always
said no. Because
And if someone phoned you and said there's a job, it costs a commission. So if it's already, used for pre-arranged, someone rings you up and says, we've got to give the doormans a tenner and there's a 100 quid job there, would you go and do the job?
I've never been that fortunate.
Well, listen, hypothetically. Hypothetically, Pete. Say I ring you and Pete.
Yeah. No, if you're a known associate of myself, I'd turn around and say, well, I'll take you for a coffee or something.
Well, I'll take you out. Yeah, you go. Well, like a bit extreme.
Along those lines, something along those. I don't think. A guy give me a guy I don't really know that well. He said, oh, you do tours, don't you? I said, I've got a tour for you.
I had the tour guides here yesterday. We'd done a podcast on the Worshipful Company of Tour Guides. And I do remember you telling me you was involved at the early days.
Yes, I'm a qualified...
Worshipful Company tour guide?
Yeah.
So am I.
You're one as well?
I've done the calls, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Whilst I was doing it, I actually enjoyed it and got a fair amount of work. But then, unfortunately, I had a bout of illness 13 years ago. And since then, my...
I'll test your tour guide knowledge on the basics, yeah? So what's the story with the King Charles the First statue?
What, on Whitehall?
Well, kind of on Whitehall, but it's on Charing Cross, actually. But if you want to say Whitehall, but I'll let you...
I don't do it anymore.
Oh, you put me on the spot there, didn't you?
Obviously, they executed him, didn't they, King Charles
I? Yeah, but
there's a black dot on the clock.
On the clock, yeah. We heard that one yesterday as well, and they wanted to keep that secret because it was like, don't tell everybody. The guy was asked, take that statue away and destroy it. So they paid him to take it away, which he did.
That's right.
He didn't destroy it. And he told people he's melted it down. He's making spoons or knives and forks and whatever, and he's selling them on, isn't he? And then when he came back, he said, he happened to have the statue again, didn't he? He sold it back to me. He never made a spoon out of it. So he sold it three times, didn't he? He sold the actual statue. What's the spot that it's on?
That's the Death Centre of London.
It's the modern centre of London.
Yeah, but that's not what it's called. Why is it called Charing Cross then? These are the basics. What did you do? You do the course used to? I haven't even done it.
It's a very basic course.
As you say, it's very.
When Pete did the knowledge, I don't think Charing Cross was in London.
No, wasn't it? Wasn't
it? It was part of the suburbs.
You do know Whips Cross, Charing Cross. Yeah. They are all the locations of when they stopped with Eleanor's body, bringing it down. They stopped and stayed overnight each night, and they made a cross memorial in those places. And Charing Cross. Charing means bend of the river. I learned all of this yesterday. Charing means bend of the river, and Charing Cross is where the cross for where Eleanor was, the body was in rest. And the steeple that you see is a replica of...
Is that the one outside Charing Cross Station?
Yes, that's a replica of what was supposed to be standing on King Charles I Island anyway. So, I should be an instructor on the course.
Exactly.
That's
a newly gained knowledge from yesterday.
Though, it was yesterday. The interesting thing I learned yesterday... was why is it called the Mao and not the Mall? Now, it seems obvious. We're just saying the Mao. We're just saying Pow Mao, whatever. And then they said that Pally Mally is a French game, mm-hmm. similar to croquet, Pally Mally. That's why it's called Pow Mao. And it's from the French pronunciation of Mao, not the Americanization. I don't know. We would have called it Mall anyway because it's Chiswick Mall and it's The Mall.
Mall.
So depends it takes part, the French pronunciation rather than...
Depends which part of London you come from. Whether you're from the right side of the river or the wrong side of the river.
Well, it was all from the wrong side of the river.
Well, I think you're outnumbered here because you got three from the right side of the river.
I'm a 50-50. My nan and granddad are Peckham, with Old Kent Road, Silver Grove.
There's always a claim, isn't there? Mitigating circumstances.
That part of the family, we disowned them. And then I'm Stepney. That's it. Bethnal Green, Stepney, Mile End. Yeah, that's the history thing. But we have touched on this thing, which is the dark side of... the taxi trade.
The only dark side? Is there anything else?
Yeah, there's loads.
What else is dark then? I'll tell you what was dark, and you knew. I don't know if we can say this on here, but you probably will leave it in knowing you. Wasn't there a dark side with an examiner once?
Oh, jeez. I will leave that comment in, but that's about the end of that discussion.
There's something I want to know a little bit, a lighter note.
Go on, lighter note, sorry.
It's a lighter note, it's about vehicles driven. I've got to ask you three, because obviously after 3 or 4 years, what have I driven? Apart from years ago, lorries. I'm talking like taxis, taxis. Obviously, I've driven a lot, but... And we'll start, I believe Pete had one called Daisy. That was your first horse, wasn't it?
Would you like me to run through my CV of vehicles? I can probably actually rattle off... The registration lot.
Don't do the registrations. We're anorex.
455S was from Stuart's garage in Fulham, which is a very large garage in Fulham. After that, I went over to...
What cab was it?
That was a...
FX4?
No. Austin? There's an old Austin. 2.5 Austin. Manual gearbox, manual steering.
Did you have a luggage door?
Yes, there was a...
Did it have the Dalek indicators?
No, it didn't. No. My old uncle was a cab driver, and he's had a beautiful cab with a coconut matting in the back, with the brown leather seats, like a Chesterfield sofa, with a centre pulley strap. So if you didn't want to speak to the driver, you could pull the glass partition up, and it would be on little notches, and you could lower it down accordingly. So. Yeah. In that 455S, back in the day, was obviously no such thing as intercoms or anything like that. And if you wanted to speak to the passenger, what you used to do, you used to illegally remove the partition stick.
Oh, yes.
Remember you?
Stop stick. It was called a stop stick. We had a stop stick to stop the window opening further so that they couldn't get through and strangle you.
It was called a stop strangle. That was one of the reasons they could, but if
forgot all about the stop stick.
Straight away, if you had anyone interested in the back of the cab, the stick would come out and you'd
slide it open.
You'd put your arm over there and
you didn't work nights in those days. Dick Turpin was about.
You had to be very, very careful.
You've just made so much little flooding back memories, because we, and certainly me and definitely you, we were last of a generation to use some certain features that don't exist anymore. For a start, the stop stick was one of those. And the other one was electric windows came in.
Oh, yes.
We had only slide-down windows, didn't we? We were spoiled
because basically if you've... Your passenger come to your near side window. You had to
lean over.
You had to lean over. Actually, before Wes, you used to be able to put your arm out the window
and open the door
for your passengers on the offside, which was another.
And if you left your keys in the cab, all you had to do is just wiggle the window a little.
Kept the window up? What was
a little latch? A little catch. You just slid it across. And if you jiggled it, it would jiggle the catch open. You couldn't lock your cab. Couldn't leave anything in, because it was so easy to get in.
You used to see cab drivers, rather than use their keys, they just got the window.
What year was that? Wasn't the first one you had?
That was 81. And then I moved over to Coles at Surrey Docks. Brian Cole and his old man Frank had a small fleet of cabs. I went automatic there. I had V47, which wasn't a bad cab. I had that for a couple of months, then I decided to go mushing, and I bought one of the first ever ill-fated FX4 R's, which is a 2.2 Rover, which, well...
It was dreadful.
The Metro
cab is the worst cab ever.
Ever made.
Oh, no, I think that was probably better than the Metro. No,
it would, if you had four people in and wanted to go up Highgate Hill.
It'd go backwards.
You'd have to say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You just can't do it. Luckily, I kept that for minimum of 2 years, and then I was fortunate to got a good truck, because it was quite low mileage, because I've always been a bit of a lazy sod.
So mushing, by the way, is an owner driver.
Yes, a musher. Yes, owner driver. Bought from the wonderful man in Overton's on Wandsworth Bridge Road. Remember many an afternoons sat in the, it was like a maternity unit, a hospital. You'd have 20 cab drivers, expectant cab drivers, pacing up and down in the waiting room whilst their cabs was being repaired or not being repaired. Yeah, so I kept that, and then I bought I sold you H160, didn't
H160 I? H160 YUL.
It was C43 CYL.
What's that, your next one or the one before?
Next one, yeah. I kept that for a number of years.
No, that's before the H160, because after that you had an S plate.
Yeah, that was the last cab I ever owned, the S plate. And yeah, I sold you that wonderful...
Great cab.
They was the Nissan 2.7 was absolutely bulletproof. And I know for a fact that a lot of cab garages, particularly those that specialise in engine buildings, went out of business because there was nothing to do.
Yeah.
I think it was Beasley Engineering or one of those, Halvey Engineering down the Old Kent Road.
You got the TX1, I remember it was the TX1, the S-Play. Yeah. It must have been the very first. Oh, I think R was the first TX1s.
Yeah, I had S.
Yeah, so it was 1 year older.
S741 LGN. Wanted to plush it up. I had a beautiful leather seat made up, especially. And the guy in M&O's, it was made up out of Connolly Hyde. I don't know if you know. Connolly Hyde is what they actually put in Rolls Royces. And I had this cab driver's seat made up out of Connolly Hyde. And it was like,
saw you coming, didn't they?
Everybody who see it was in awe of that. I want that seat, basically.
Where did it end up now? It's in scrap metal yard, isn't it?
I kept that cab until 2 years before it was due to come off plate. I sold it to my good friend Andy at Royal Taxis. He put it in his fleet for a couple of years, and then he basically...
Got the 10 grand back or something.
No. He actually took the engine out and sold the engine to South Africa.
Oh.
And as a momentum, I actually asked him to take the for hire sign off as a momentum on the...
You mean a memento? A momentum is a sort of motion going forward, but it's memento is...
I went to school down the Old Kent Road. Don't be fooled.
That's tragic.
Anyway.
The TX1 had a really funny flaw. When you opened the doors, all the water fell on you. There was two floors with the TX1. That's there was a vacuum. Yeah. When you shut the door, there was a vacuum. It was airtight. So it would shut the doors and they'd bounce open again because you created an airlock. And went boink. So you couldn't shut the doors. Right. You had to get out of the cab and go and shut the doors yourself, didn't you? Because it was open all the time. And the other one was that when it rained, the water would catch in the guttering. So when you opened it, it just fell on you.
Yeah, it needed a seam on it. They started putting a seam on it to stop the water coming over. But then they did start putting those... the plastic deflectors.
Yes. Other flaws did they get? Because the TX1 had all the flaws, but it had still had the Nissan engine, didn't it?
Which was that was a bulletproof.
Yeah. And then they went to a Mitsubishi, I think, after that.
Yes. No, or was it an Italian? I think it was an Italian.
All I've driven, I've had a few TX4s. Most of them were out of Ascots with the warranty. Oh, you probably know the top, but peace of mind. A couple of Vitos. I'm down the TXE. My favourite is the TX4, to be honest. You know, it's all got pluses, but I feel like a bit like John Michelle Yeo on a TXE.
I'll tell you, when I drove his TX4, John, he said to me, drive it one day, because I think you drove mine, didn't you? It's a lot smaller, and I was 2 stone heavier than I am now.
Yeah.
And I had to get out of it, because straight away he said to me, you look like a circus bear in that. So I just went, I've got to get the TXE, I can't be driving this little
thing. Was the other problem with the TX4s and the fairways. You know me, Dave, I'm a giant of a man, right? In the fairway, my seat position, my head touched the roof, and I'm 5'7". So if you were 6'2", you were...
I actually spent 2 lovely years in a Vito, and going from in a TX into a Vito, it was, God, I could have a party in it.
Yeah.
It was so spacious. The only thing about the drawback from the Vito, you used to be able to put your left leg up on the bulkhead in a TX just to stretch your leg out, whereas saying that, you didn't actually need it in the Vito, because you did if you adjusted your seat right the way back.
You know what I don't hear anyone say anymore, Pete, but back in the day when you first passed out, an experienced driver would always say to you, how's your knee?
Tempting fate here. I've never suffered with any of my bones or back or anything. I maybe I've been fortunate, or maybe it's just where I'm a lazy sod and don't spend enough time actually in the cab. But you see drivers jump up when you go around Lincoln's Inn Fields to spend a penny. You see drivers get out and they go, stretching their...
I don't hear anyone saying it. You'd get a pain in your knee because you're braking and accelerating more than you've done normally because you do a shift of work that would then bring muscle fatigue in your knee muscles.
No, I used to get a lot worse now. I don't get pain knee, but my legs were bad when I was a HGV driver. Back in the 80s and all that, you doubled the clutch all the time. So you were two times to change
it. Clutch to get it out,
So, and then you'd, most lorries, I think they were going automatic now anyway as well. But, yeah, driving a cab is a lot easier than a truck, I can tell you.
You had power steering though, didn't you?
Not initially in a Scamore I had. It was very rough, I didn't even have a seat in the first truck, Tipper, I drove back. Yeah. It was at Elridge, 1970, so what was it? It was mid-80s then when I passed that. And it had a crate that you sat on with a cushion. Yeah, no seatbelt, no seat.
no health and safety.
That was 1986 or something like that, yeah. And that was working on things like, I was working on the British Library then.
Yeah.
Up by...
I remember, you built that single-handed.
Yeah, all on my own, yeah.
Health of sitting down a lot is not great, is it, for us when we're in the cab? And so many drivers don't get out and walk around and use the excuse.
I'm guilty of that.
To get out and walk around the cab and open the door, just do it. You've let the blood flow back to your legs.
Exactly. That's the same with studying knowledge, though. You can also be sitting there so long, they need to get up and go and clear your head.
They've got the new Apple Watch, because they're all Apple Watched up. The Apple Watch tells you to stand now. It'll give you a warning and says it's time to stand don't keep sitting down. Or it's also time to meditate, it says.
So having said that about the knowledge, what's your top tips for doing the knowledge?
Join WizEN.
Join the school? Join WizEN?
100%.
Yeah.
I would have got through it. But you?
No, I don't think many people would they? Now the school, you get through. There's lots of people I think would give up without the backing of a school.
I
probably do wish I'd actually attended a school, because it would have...
I don't think you'd have done
it. Was there schools then? What schools was there? Do you remember?
There was the General. There used to be a school.
Yeah, the London General.
London General. And
it's very, very famous, the London General School. I mean, it really goes back a long, long time.
And there was the Greyhound at Penton Street.
Oh, was that above the pub then? Or?
No, it was right on the corner. It's called the Greyhound, right opposite the old carriage office.
Oh, the shop.
On Penton Street, on the corner of White Lion Street. And the one what morphed into Knowledge Point, that was previously called something else, I think. Going there, the Caledonian or something like that.
It kind of was. That was kind of linked to the London General, because if you read this book, this gives you a little bit of history. There was a connection. The London General was to do with the Army Benevolent Fund or whatever it is. So when you leave the military and they try and get you a job, they fund it and stuff. And they used to fund it and they used to pay the London General to get you out.
And what else would you recommend someone to do the knowledge?
Yes.
Thinking about it, I probably would say, because I think then there is a lot of scope for someone coming in, because I think the cab trade will come good again, because I don't see how people can, at the new way of hailing a cab, I don't think it can sustain itself, because something's going to come along. If Uber was to have to stop surcharging in the way their business model, if it was to be pulled into line and regulated properly, then they would have no drivers.
And that's the reason we should all join someone like the UCG or UTEG.
Yeah,
because as you just said, they're pulled into line. And the only way that's going to happen is having someone, a voice for us, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, exactly.
We need to be more unified.
100%.
100%.
A big unit, 40,000 drivers. But if you protest, the other drivers will work it.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a fan of protests, but what I am a fan of this is if you've got a team leader and you're part of that gang and the team leader says this and you don't agree with it necessarily, you still all got to pull in the one direction. So you can put your voice your views of why you don't think it's a good idea and give other ideas. But once the decision's made that we're the team, we're going to go with that and we'll see what the results is. And as 15,000 of us, and back in the day, 26,000 there was of us.
It was about 24 green, but... 2000 or something.
It was 26 all in all. Yeah. But you're very powerful.
Going back to previous said, we're 14,000 different
individual businesses.
And trying to get everyone to sing from the same hymn sheet is...
Well, you're never going to sing from the same hymn sheet, but my point would be that at least you've got to go along with it in some way. You had, that's why you've got to have that representation. And
well, you only had to look at the demonstrations. You had to, apart from the first major one against Uber when we blocked Whitehall, after that, all subsequent demonstrations. It was that you'd have the fateful sort of like 200, 300 cabs, and that'd be it. Unfortunately, everyone's just worried about the next pound note.
And the short-term pound note.
Just being very, very short-sighted and not really wanting to put anything back into what they used to say is cab driving is a profession, minicab driving, private eye is a stopgap for most people. Mm. And so, and
if you see that as a natural progression, you know, like minicab drivers or private eye or whatever we should call them, do you think that's something that we should tap into to get people on the knowledge? Or what's your opinion?
Yeah, I think so. Cause I think probably...
If you ask every minicab driver, I'm not everyone, but if you ask most, the majority of minicab drivers, would you like to become a black cab driver?
They say yes.
Yeah, of course, they're all wannabes, really, aren't they?
Mm.
That's
They lie to themselves, don't they? You hear them a lot saying, I earn more than a black cab driver, and I know more than a black cab driver. And really, what you're just doing is just trying to keep yourself confident that you're in the right position. You're not.
You're talking yourself in not to do it.
I don't want to do it. That's what you're saying, because really every PHV driver that's ever done it, they don't go back. But Lenny, I'm naming blast from the past, Lenny Woodward, he said some good things to me years ago. They used to park up in Cornhill, all the illegal Cortinas and whatever, and back then picking up illegally. They weren't minicabs.
Clipboard Johnny. Yeah. Clipboard Johnny, as they was called.
And Lenny said to me, Dean, if it's that good, right, you all these cabbies moaning about, oh, they're all there nicking our fares, nicking our work. And it basically pointed out to me, Dean, you're one in, one out, aren't you? And we was in the 90s. It was one in, one out. So I couldn't be any busier. I couldn't do any more. And he said to me, if it's that great, get yourself a saloon car and go and do it. Yeah. What else are you going to do?
You're saying that about them guys that are saying they're moaning like that. That's another reason why they should be paying into one of the orgs, isn't it?
Yes.
For all those things so that you moan about there, who else is going to be our voice otherwise?
Yeah, you can't moan and not go into it. No. If you moan and be in it, yes, you've got a right to moan, but not be in it.
You must be in it.
The cabbies that say, oh, well, the game's dead. Why are you still doing it then, mate? Why are you wasting your time?
I had that said to me when I was doing the knowledge all those years ago. Cab drivers put, nah, no good, mate. You don't want to do that.
When was it? 1981? They were saying that to you then? I've seen the old clip of a video. It must have been 1970s. They're saying that. And they say that in that clip, don't they?
It's funny, because my old grandfather used to work as a porter in the posh blocks of flats in Mayfair. So he had a lot of day-to-day contact with cab drivers, obviously, hailing cabs. And when I told him I was going to be a cab driver, he turned around and said to me, give me that sign. He went, nah. He went, it's no good. Obviously, he had been brainwashed by hundreds of cab drivers who he talks to.
Was a golden era that was it around about the Thatcher era when Canary Wharf was being, the Docklands, they invested, money was everywhere, maybe 80s.
Big Bang 85 was, the game was phenomenal. Everybody in the city would be, work till 1 o'clock, out larging it. I had guys in the back of the cab late afternoon going into the West End playing spoofer who was going to pick up the rest of the day's bill. They termed them as Baraboy brokers, didn't they? And they was.
Yeah, but do you see them anymore?
No, you don't. What killed that off was when it all went computerisation. They had the nous to do the dealing on their brains, but once it went over to computers, that killed a lot of that off.
That was bread and butter for us back in the 90s.
I would think they work from home as well, wouldn't they? That's right.
Maybe. Mm. But they were so big shots, jumping in. Right, they were going to restaurants, drinking champagne, jumping in and out, and they were having a right old time.
And what they used to do to you as well, they used to have to buy receipt books off you.
Yes.
Your 50 pence receipt book. You thought you were a big-time businessman selling them a receipt book for a fiver. You'd pay 50 pence. You'd go, God, mate, 450.
He's doing about a grand.
They're just sitting there writing out receipts left, right, and centre to their boss.
You still get asked for receipts now?
Occasionally.
Still get asked for them now.
But when they do, straight away I go, sorry, and press on that cab vision, you can press a cash receipt.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
And so I fill it.
But Pete, you know, they used to say, have you got any spare receipts? Which is basically blagging it for, they want it for nothing. Mm. And when you first knew, you think there's only pieces of paper, but they're going to commit fraud. Yeah, and I don't know if you're committing fraud by giving them.
You'd only be liable if they said to you, I'm going to commit fraud with this, because how about if he was going to use it to write a phone number down? You've got to know he's good. What he's, you know, to be a part of something.
Well, you do know, but you.
I mean, about that, in that case, you'd have a serial killer who buys a knife or something out of the shop that sold it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, true, true.
He couldn't.
Now, the best one with that was that I always used to say to you, I took a cab earlier on today and I forgot to get a receipt.
Can you do it? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, people don't realise, like, you do the job, say, over 6 quid or whatever, they give a blank receipt, even if it's 50 quid, give it to their go. Use a minicab in future.
Yeah, 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 50 quid. But he'll claim it back on expenses. I suppose you could go half each. I will write you a receipt for 50 quid, but the fare's 25, okay? It says 6 on a thingy, but... At least go half each. Mm. Well, I wouldn't do that either.
I don't think they'd write it down. They're probably going to repeat it. They've got to keep that figure down. When you bought that vehicle from me, was that your first cab?
No.
No?
No, it's my third or fourth.
So what was your first?
First one... Well, the first one I rolled out on was brand new from Ascot's. A lovely brand new red one. It was £200 a week to rent it.
What year was that?
I think it was an M plate. So... It's, I don't know what year that takes us to. I know S is 77, and then we come around again with S. What was 93? Your S? Because there wasn't 26 plates, was there? It went something like 22 plates, and it would come back around to the beginning again. There was no vowels, was there? But you had a B, a C, a D. You didn't have an E.
You had an A in the early 80s. Yeah, so I had an A.
Then what was the letters would that they didn't
an
80, have?
83, because we had a Y in 82.
There was no O.
I had an A.
They didn't have an O plate.
83, yeah.
No I. So there was something about the vowels, but not quite the A. Yes, they did
Q.
Have
they didn't have a Q.
Now we're going back. There was actually a Q.
Yeah.
when they finished making the FX4s, basically, and they went over to the FX4Rs, everyone was so disgruntled with them. Someone, Bright Spark, decided to re-import engines from abroad. And the carriage office, in their infinite wisdom, they wouldn't license it as a new vehicle with a new registration. So it had the prefix Q. And so if you research Q cabs, it was a...
So the plate was a Q, and you knew from that it was not registered.
It was a new vehicle with an imported engine from somewhere else.
A Q cab.
Hence, they was called Q cabs.
But also, when you did the knowledge, what bike was it? A C90 you used?
Cub 90. I bought my Cub 90 off of Frankie Fox. Do you know Frankie Fox?
Love Frankie Fox.
I haven't seen him since I bought a bike off him.
I actually bumped into him a fortnight ago. The only time I ever bump into Frankie is round Lincoln's Inn Fields, where he obviously...
Where he lives, he sleeps.
Frankie is one of the true proper characters of the cab trade. Ex-Smithfield Market, meat porter.
Yeah.
Built like a brick.
Frankie would have passed out the knowledge in 1994 because I would have bought a bike from him in 94 and I passed out in 96. And that was it, yeah. The Cub 90 was a brilliant bike to do
so
it
So that's
on.
What a C stood for then?
Yeah, Cub.
Is it? I never knew that.
Yeah.
So was there a 70? Is 50? Was there a 50?
Was a 50.
I'd on the 50.
It was no good though, was it?
After 2 weeks of actually having it, I blew the engine.
No, that was almost impossible to do.
No, I'm
going to put a picture up on this of my Cub 90. I've got a picture
of it. You've got a picture
of it? Yeah, I've got a picture. It was a lovely bike. And it just went and went.
How many miles did you put on it doing the knowledge?
You know what? I don't think it worked. I don't think anything worked on it. Frankie Fox sold me a dud.
It was second hand when you bought it. It was old.
It was second hand. So he'd done the knowledge on it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if, and we'll ask Frank, you can ask Frank for me, but he might have bought it off someone who'd done the knowledge on it. So bearing in mind when Pete done knowledge, only took a couple of weeks. So there might have been four people who had it before me because the knowledge actually got hard in the 90s. Back in the 80s, it was...
Everyone says it was hard when I'd done it.
No. I know, but when...
During the war, we had
Silvio on and Silvio said, you know, that the guys today, they just don't work hard enough. And I said, Silvio, how long did it take you? Oh, it took me 15 months. I said, when was it? Back in the 82, 83, I'd done it. And how long did it take you? Oh, we'd done it in five appearances. And you think the guys that they don't work hard enough is the reason it takes them so long? You'd have no idea.
I had a bike, I had an Honda, but I'd done 1,100 miles.
Yes.
1,100 miles.
Right? Dave, you.
And I've completed the knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's a bit of a lie because it was winter time. I did something in the car. I don't know if I've ever told you this. I was doing it with a guy, and you actually know him, and you know him, Paul Winters.
Oh, yeah.
And we actually did a bit of work. We was working nights and we was in the trucks, wasn't it, Bo? And one of the trucks we had to drive was a dust cart. And we just went over weekends when we were working. We had to run the dust cart right out west part to Heath Row to empty. It's the only thing that was open 24 hours a day. And we used to do some of the runs in the dust cart. So I do apologise for those people that we went down this street with all the lights flashing, all the lights and banging and crashing, yeah. And he would hold the ball and we could lift into, right into, yeah. And we'd done a bit, yeah. Some of the runs in the dust cart. That's rents, and I hardly used the bike here.
Yeah.
Lots of the roads I knew from driving for all those years, yeah, so I didn't waste my time.
This is something that we was pointing out with the PHV drivers, and something I've pointed out many times. There is a problem with PHV drivers when they start to take knowledge. The problem is that they actually think they know something, and that complacency means that they're usually making a mistake. They're rubbish at it. They don't realise that it isn't a case. For example, you and me and you, if we had to do the knowledge again, we'd half struggle. We won't struggle driving a cab, and we won't struggle working our job because we're trained to do that. But passing the knowledge is a different skill because it involves sitting in a chair, speaking the words to a person, telling them how you get from A to B. So our skill isn't, we're not training to be taxi drivers at all. We're training to sit in chairs and tell people how we get from A to B. And the PHV drivers, they come thinking, well, I know London. Yeah, okay, you know London, but I bet you couldn't even take me from the Aldwych to Buckingham Palace. You couldn't do it. And most of them couldn't. They wouldn't get you to Parliament Square. They wouldn't get you to Victoria Station, for sure. They wouldn't know the little roads that are in between, all the intricate stuff that we need to learn, and we can't make mistakes. So if you're not complacent, you got a good chance. But you weren't. But you, Dave, you were venomous. On the knowledge.
It's addictive, isn't it? It's addictive. I think so. And I think this is why I try and get people to get engrossed. And it's difficult in the beginning. It does take a little bit of time to get your head around it. Now, like 2 or 3 months. But once you start in 6 months and a year, just surrender to it. You know, I mean surrendering in a nice way. I mean, you know, go to the schools, pick up the books, pick up as much as your brain can take regular breaks, and you will find in a period of time you'll be able to do more. So like in the beginning, a couple of hours around the map and everything else, you've got a bit of an headache. By the end of the knowledge, you can do 12 hours standing on your head. But engrossing it and listen to the likes of Dean and listen to the examiners and listen to them and just surrender to it and you'll go with the flow. You know, you'll get sucked in.
Yeah.